You are listening to the Fly the W670 podcast. It is season three. It's episode 83, the 2024 Cubs infield grades. Don't forget to listen, download, review. Most importantly, subscribe to the podcast. Follow on the socials, Fly the W670 on Twitter, Instagram. And of course, you can find us on Facebook or email us, flythew670@gmail.com. All right, Crawley. Award season is coming up, and we are in the middle of the LCS series.
Yep, we got all sorts of things going on, but one thing we want to kind of look at today is our annual grading of the position show and kind of just seeing what happened this year and whatnot. A couple of things to kind of keep in mind, and for those of you watching on the 670 Score YouTube channel, some information about the 2024 Cubs. We talked how they finished 83-79, one game worse than last year. At Wrigley, 44-36, it's all right, not great. On the road, 39-42. On season openers or series openers, they were 25-27. Rubber matches, they were 10-12. Home series, 13-12-1. Road series, 10-14-2. And Dustin, when you look at this, you can see where everything kind of fell apart in the season when you go month by month. In March and April, they were 18-12. May, they were 10-18. And June, 11-16. So just right there, that's what killed you. And then July, 13-12. August, when they were making that run, they went 18-8, but they ran out of gas once again in September to go 13-12. So as we kind of take a look at what the Cubs really need for next season, you know, it's important to see what they had and how they did this year. When it comes to offense, we want to get a baseline reading for how the players did on offense compared to the rest of the league in 2024. Dustin, you and I grew up at a different time as far as offense in baseball is concerned. So this is for context for our listeners so they know this. In 2024, the average batting average, do you know what it is, Dustin? An average hitter, what they would hit?
238.
243.
Okay.
So an average hitter hits 243. An average on base percentage is 312, and an average slug is 399. So that gives you an average slash line of 243, 312, 399. So offense continues to be down around the league, but that's a different topic for a different show. I don't know how they're going to fix that. Now, Dustin, one thing to keep in mind when we talk about the offense is Wrigley, and Jed has been sure to mention it plenty of times, is that the park factors at Wrigley as far as the weather is concerned. This year, Wrigley Field was 29th out of 30 ballparks as far as being a not hitter-friendly park. When it comes to home runs, 25th, fly balls, 27th. So you want to kind of be around 100 with these park factors. So this is the lowest home run park factor for Wrigley Field since 2013. And so if you remember 2013, that was a pretty crappy year, and I think it was a 100 loss season, if memory serves me correctly. So it did not play well. A lot of fly balls, I think they said on average, it averaged about 6 feet of difference it took off those balls. So a lot of balls that may have been home runs other years just didn't go out. So when we look at how each player did defensively, we're going to use two different stats. Outs above average, which focuses solely on how many outs a fielder makes above or below the average for a given play of difficulty. And then defensive runs and saves. That's the attempt to quantify how many runs a fielder saved or cost their team based on overall defensive performance. The main difference between those two stats, outs above average looks at the probability of making an out on each play, while DRS looks at the overall impact of those plays on the score of the game. We're also going to look at a couple splits, and some of them are kind of eye-popping when I was going through them. And so when we, you know, when we talk about fielding a little bit, Dustin, the Gold Glove finalists were announced by Rawlings. I was listening to the Mully and Haw show this morning, yeah, like I always do. Yeah. And, you know, there's no surprise that Ian Happ is back in it and Dansby Swanson is back in it. As far as Nico Hoerner, he will not defend his Gold Glove, but honestly, I didn't think that that was a huge oversight, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, it's a hard one to judge. I mean, I'll raise a hand. I don't watch baseball. Like, I don't grind on the other teams outside of the division a little bit, right? Like, if you're saying that the Arizona Diamondback second baseman had a better year, okay. I mean, I'll take your word for it, right? I just don't grind on it that way. thought Nico was good at times. He had flashes, but there were also times when he wasn't as good as he was in the past. But I have a hard time. He wasn't an all-star. If you're not an all-star, I don't know how you're going to be a gold glover.
But I mean, they're two separate things. And
I understand that, but I'm just saying that's my measuring stick. I mean, I don't even think you're in the conversation. If you're not an all-star at your position, then how in the world would you be a gold glover at your position?
Well, let me give you an example. I think the biggest oversight in this list is PCA not making the gold glove. Now, if PCA is just a just 240 hitter, slightly below average, not hit, let's say again, 10 home runs. Okay, that's not an all-star. But if you're telling me he's not the best defensive center fielder in baseball, you're crazy. And that's what the gold glove measures.
All right. So let's talk about center field first then. Let's start there. We're there. Let's start there. I tried to zoom in. I couldn't zoom in on your graphic there. Who's in the conversation? Somebody from Colorado, I think I saw. Is that right?
Yeah, it's someone from Colorado, and I want to make sure I get this right. And so for the nominees for the center fielders, you had for the finalists, let's take a look. So if you're taking a look at the National League, we're going to go National League, and we are looking at...
Oh, that's all that should matter, by the way. There are two sets of gold glovers, just to be... This is something else that came up on the Mully and Haw show this morning. There are two sets of gold glovers. Right, there's an American League Gold Glove winner and there's a National League Gold Glove winner. There's not a Gold Glove winner for baseball.
Right. Brenton Doyle is the center fielder of the Rockies. He's one of the finalists. Blake Perkins from the Brewers and Jacob Young from the Nationals. So again, I think that neither, you know, I don't think any of those guys are really all stars, and I think that PCA for sure is definitely better than all of those guys, in my opinion.
All right. And I'll take your word for it. Now, is there some defensive metric that we're using that outclasses them, or is this an eye test?
Yeah. No. We use outs above average and defensive runs saved.
All right.
So that's what we're going to kind of be looking at when we look at it. Now, when we look at the infield this time around, obviously, we're looking at the one that we want to kind of look at right now is first base. And with first base, you're talking about Michael Busch, obviously, and this was his first full season in baseball, got him for a trade. And Dustin, I'm just kind of hoping this trade doesn't come back to bite the Cubs, because both the guys that they traded for him are doing really, really good in the minor league level, Zaire Hope and Jackson Ferris. So either way, Michael Busch, 26 years old, he finished the season with a slash line. He had .248 average, .335 on base percentage. He hit 21 home runs and 65 RBIs. So, you know, I'm not saying that it wasn't, I think it was a pretty good first year as far as offensively, in my opinion. He slugged .440. So when you look at all of that, I think that offensively, you know, you're going to be happy with Michael Busch on that, right?
Yeah, he's a little bit above average, right?
A little bit above average, right. So we said .243, .312, .399. And he hit .248, .335, .440. So definitely above average. But Dustin, the thing to me that really kind of was interesting is when you take a look at where he finished as far as outs above average, when you look at this here, he is in the top 10. If you know, we're counting ties and stuff like that at first base, because there's a couple guys at 0-0 or 1-1. The best defensive first baseman was Carlos Santana of the Twins. And when you look at some of the names, you'll know Matt Olson was the best, but you have Bryce Harper in there, Christian Walker. The Diamondbacks have great defense. Anthony Rizzo still in there all those years. Michael Busch was number 12th when it comes to first baseman, but he was tied with Spencer Torkelson from Detroit, Anthony Rizzo, Freddie Freeman from the Dodgers, and Michael Busch is all in that category with one.
Right, defense, but if you're talking, again, I think you have to also separate this. Again, like I said, I think this is a National League, American League thing. And based on that, I mean, listen, you know, he's the fifth best defensive first baseman, and the names that are in front of him are all of them are all-star caliber first baseman, or you might even have him as a DH if they weren't playing first base. All these guys.
I agree with you. And the other thing to keep in mind is he had not really played. He'd been playing second base for the Dodgers last year. So when you think about it, you know,
he's growing into the position. Yes, he's growing into it.
Yeah, and then when we take a look at defensive run saves, slightly different metric. But yeah, again, with defensive run saves, Matt Olson from Atlanta is number one, but Michael Bush is right there at number six with five defensive runs saved. He's tied with Bryce Harper. And so when you, again, when you look at this in the National League, he's tied for the third best first baseman in the National League when it comes for defensive runs saved. So as far as it's concerned, what grade would you give Michael Bush for his first year?
B minus?
I think B minus is that is exactly where I was at too. I thought B minus was a fair way to go. Hopefully the guy ends up just, you know, taking big step forwards as far as all of last year is concerned. But the one thing, Dustin, that I do want to say when we're talking about Michael Bush, and this is where you kind of look at the splits a little bit here. Okay. And when you look at the splits, this is where it's really crazy with Michael Bush. Michael Bush, when you're looking at his splits, his average at Wrigley Field, Dustin, was 211, 299, 384 was his slash line. 211 was his batting average at Wrigley. Away, he hit 70 points higher on away games. 280, 366, 489. I thought that was just
That's really interesting. Right. That is really interesting. Yep.
In April, he hit 282. In May, when the whole team couldn't hit, he hit 208. But then he jumped back in June when the Cubs were still struggling, 297. In July, he hit 261. But then he tailed off at the end of the season, 233 in August and 216 in September. So I'm wondering how much of that was just kind of fatigue in his first full season. I thought he played a lot more than I expected as well. I was expecting more of a platoon with him and Patrick Wisdom, and I didn't see that much.
No. Wisdom played way less than he did.
So next up, we go to our guy, Nico Hoerner, the subject of many a trade rumors right now this season. When you talk about Nico Hoerner, he hit 273. He had seven home runs, 48 RBIs. We said that he led the Cubs this year with 31 stolen bases. And when you look at the slash line for Nico this year, I think, you know, just a good year. 273 was his average, 335 OBP. And he slugged 373. You're not going to get a power hitter out of them. So the numbers, for the most part, it dipped a little bit. But again, we talked about Wrigley Park factors. He hit 283 last year, 273 this year. He's right about where you would expect him to be. He didn't overshoot anything this season. Now, when we talk about the defense, that's when you kind of take a look and say, okay, well, how did he do in that category? And so with Nico Hoerner, again, when it comes to outs above average, there was only a couple guys ahead of him. He has 10 outs above average, and only one from the National League. Otto Lopez was the only one that was a little bit better with 14 defensive runs save. Cleveland, Andrés Giménez, we're watching him in the ALCS, and Marcus Semien were the best two, and they're both American League. So Nico's still up there, but when you look at defensive runs saved, that's where he kind of took a little bit of a tumble right there. He had four defensive runs saved. So Bryce Terang from Milwaukee had 21.
Wow. That's just a big difference.
Right. And I wouldn't be shocked if Bryce Terang wins the gold glove there. Ketel Marte, he's great in Arizona. He's at 10. And Bryson Stott was at 7. So Terang, Marte, and Stott are all the gold glove finalists. And all of them were ahead of Nico as far as defensive runs saved.
All right.
So where would you go with Nico as far as grading out Nico on this one?
C plus.
Yeah, C plus looks good. I you know, remember when we were talking last year when we were talking about our predictions, I thought that he was kind of going to really have an even better year with the bat. I want to get somebody on the podcast that can talk to us a little bit about those park factors because I want to know more and what we could possibly expect in the future, you know?
Yeah, it's a wildly interesting thing. Yeah, it's wildly interesting.
When we look at Nico's splits here, and this is where we're talking about, you know, how he did at Wrigley versus how he did on the road. And this is something that a lot of teams are, you know, that a lot of these players that we want to take a look at home, he hit 260, 311, 329. That's his slash line. So he hit 287 on away, 359 was his OPP and 416. So a difference of about 0.027 on that. It's not as significant as Michael Bush, but there's still a significant difference, right?
There's a difference.
In April, he hit 277. In May, when everyone's struggling, he hits 250. June, 230. bounces back in July. It's 262, August 280. And then take a look at September, 355.
I was going to say, I thought he had a really good September.
And so a lot of this, and we're not talking about really Cody Bellinger as much today, but a lot of this has to do too with injuries, and Nico was beat up at the beginning of the season. And so when you take a look at how bad he did in May and June, I'm sure that injuries were a big factor to that, right?
Yep.
So we'll see what happens. Next up, we're going to head over to the shortstop position where we get Dansby Swanson again, going for another gold glove, which congratulations for Dansby on that one. With Dansby Swanson, we're looking here at how he did this year. He slashed 242, 312, 390. So that average 242, slightly, did we say below average on that one? Slightly, nothing shocking, but he had 16 home runs, 66 RBIs, 19 stolen bases. I don't think that offensively, you know, here's the thing, Dustin. That year that he had his free agent walk year, I'm looking at this. I don't know if you can see this. For 2022, his walk year free agency, he hit 277. That was 30 points higher than he did in 2021, and it's 30 points higher than he hit in 2023 and roughly 2024. Right. So that 2022, that offensive production that he had was by far as average, on base, slugging, almost every category was just way off the charts, you know, that he hasn't done before and hadn't done since. So with Dansby, I just kind of take a look at this and say to yourself, all right, well, he's not the guy that's going to be your offensive superstar. He's a guy that's going to go on hot streaks. He's going to be a guy that goes on cold streaks. You know, he's not the guy that's going to carry you regardless. Right,
there's too many of those guys on this team, though. There's too many roller coaster guys. Too many of them.
Now, with shortstops, Dansby Swanson is number one on outs above average, better than Bobby Witt, better than Francisco Lindor, Ezekiel Tovar, number one in all of baseball with 18 outs above average. As far as defensive runs are concerned, a little lower on this one. He was number five with defensive runs saved with seven. Ezekiel Tovar from Colorado is up there. Mason Wynn, the youngster from St. Louis, who really helped improve St. Louis's defense this year, had the most defensive runs saved. But, you know, when you combine the metrics, Dansby is by far the best shortstop, and I wouldn't be shocked to see him with that gold glove once again. When we look at the splits, actually, Dansby hit better at home than on the road. He slashed 257, 332, 428. But at away games, he slashed 227, 283, 354. So much better for him at home than on the road. When we look at month by month, in April, when the team was doing good, he had 235. How about May, Dustin? 155.
I mean, you just can't do that. If you're hurt, then you need to step aside. You can't be that type of a player batting where he was batting. I mean, finally they lowered him as the season went on, but I mean, making the kind of money he's making and hitting 153, come on.
In June, he hit 237. In July, he went down to 225, and then he finished strong. He finished a 261 average in August, 303 in September. But again, that May and June, it was the entire team that just ended up struggling. And that's why we are where we are, which is not talking about the Cubs in the postseason, right?
Right, right. Everybody had an off time at the same time. So like we talked about the roller coaster, everybody was on the incline together and then everybody was on the decline together.
Now, this is where it gets tricky, Dustin, because the Cubs really had two different third basemen, right? In the first half of the season, you got Christopher Morel, who was given the job of third baseman. He was handed the job, and they said he's going to do it. And it did not go well for Christopher Morel this season. He slashed for the year, and remember, with two different teams right there, 196, 288, 346 was his slug. As far as home runs, 21 home runs, 60 RBIs, 8 stolen bases. But that average, 196. I mean, if you're going to have 196, you got to have 40 home runs.
Right. And that didn't happen.
No. He definitely got half that one. And so that's who you had in the first half. And then in the second half, Isak Paredes came in. And when we talk about Isak Paredes, he didn't have the kind of year that he was hoping to have either. Between the two teams, he slashed 238, 346, 393. Just not really up to his standards. He had 19 home runs, 80 RBIs, one stolen base. So offensively, just not really, he didn't make that big of a difference that the Cubs were hoping. And that's the second year in a row, Dustin, that they went going for someone and trying to improve defensively and or offensively at third base and weren't able to do it. Now, get this, Dustin, third base on the fielding. This is the top guys, Joey Ortiz, again from the Brewers, Matt Chapman. You got Nolan Arenado up there, no Paredes. Then when we get to kind of the middle of the pack, guys that were kind of just basically, you could basically plug in any other average guy and that's what you would get. Isak Paredes is slightly below that. So as far as Isak Paredes is concerned, he was worth negative one outs above average. That's what he was worth. So he was roughly the equivalent of Manny Machado, that who didn't have his greatest defensive year at third, usually is much better. Anthony Rendon's right there at negative two, but those guys struggled. Now, when we go to the worst third baseman, Christopher Morel is right up there with outs above average. He was the worst third baseman with negative 14. So he cost whatever team he was on, the combination of the Cubs and the Rays, he cost them 14 runs because of his play at third base.
That's almost like you can't put him out there. I mean, that's awful.
Now, when you take a look at defensive runs saved, Isak Paredes scores much better on that. He ended up with 19 defensive runs saved. So he's roughly where Jose Ramirez is or Joey Ortiz from Milwaukee. Didn't look as bad. So he's able to make the routine plays, but when he can't make plays or he didn't make or he made mistakes, it ended up always costing the team, it appears, you know?
Yeah.
So that's the infield right now. What grade would you give? We didn't grade Dansby Swanson. What grade would you give Dansby while we're thinking about it?
B+. And I think I'm being nice.
I'm going to go with C+ on Dansby.
Wow. C+.
I'll go B-. Go B-. Just what we were talking about is just, it's okay to have hot streaks and cold streaks. You just, again, I don't know
what we're talking about, but wait a minute. Hold on a minute. Now I'm confused. Are we doing fielding or are we grading their overall year?
I'm grading their overall year.
Oh, I'm grading fielding. Okay. I thought this was about grading the infield, like their fielding, since we're talking gold gloves. I didn't know we were doing everything. Then a C minus. Okay. I'll see your C plus and I'll lower you a C-. Okay. So now I understand what we're doing here.
Right.
I think the other two grades still would fit, but not on that one.
Yeah. The offense, you know, was again, you come to expect some of that, but some of that was just really, really, really awful. Not good. All right. And then Isak, well, with Christopher Morel, I think we know what we're giving him, right?
Yep.
Morel's an F. I mean, there's no way.
I think the position's a D.
Right.
I think the position's a D because he's got to be part of it. And Paredes at best was a C-.
I would agree. C- on Paredes, 100%.
So F and a C-, you get a good old fat D.
And so, you know, here's the thing, Dustin, is that Paredes doesn't cost you a ton of money, right? You got him under team control. Do they believe he's the answer? Or if there's a better answer, and we will take a look at free agencies, would it be smarter to continue to keep trying to shop that position at third base, try to find somebody with a little bit more pop than Paredes? Paredes, if you've looked at his splits, a lot of his splits on some of that, and we got to look at Paredes' split right here. You know, he's another guy, when he was home, he hit 196, 315, 356, away 279, 379, 430. But, you know, when we didn't have him for the first half, but in the second half of the season, let's say July, he was struggling when the Cubs got him. He was hitting 136. When in August, 165 when the Cubs got him. Yeah. And then in September, 288. But, you know, if he can be a 288 hitter for the whole season, that
would be great. That's what you were hoping for when you did what you did. But, and his defense, you know, just a step above. I mean,
Well, here's the thing. He is able
to a lot to be desired.
He was able to make a lot of the routine plays. He just didn't look as good as we were hoping.
And yeah, he's not slick. He's far from slick.
Right. But you know, through the numbers, he'll make the plays that you need to. He's not going to cost you runs usually. But he's not going to sit there and save you a bunch of runs either. That's not going to happen either.
Yep.
So we got that. So next week we'll take a look at the outfield and kind of grade that out there.
All right. So outfield next. Now I understand the rules of engagement, if you will.